Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh,
no, how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to the game World Cup Daily from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer and thank you for joining us. We're here every match day of the World Cup, podcasting after 10 o'clock UK time every night. It is match day 11 and still no nil-nils at this terrific tournament. Later on, we're going to be speaking to Alison Rudd in Kazan after Colombia knocked Poland out of the World Cup. Japan and Senegal shared the spoils in a 2-2 draw as Group H remains wide open. But the big story today is, of course, England progressing to the last 16 with a record-breaking win over Panama. In the studio with me, having washed away the England face paint, it is Matt Hughes. Paul Joyce is in Nizhny Novgorod, having watched the Three Lions, and joins us now. So England thrashed Panama 6-1. It's the biggest win for an England team at any major tournament. Captain Harry Kane becomes the third England player to score a World Cup hat-trick after Sir Geoff Hurst and Gary Lineker. Before we get the thoughts of Paul and Matt, we caught up with Oliver Kay earlier today for his reaction.
It was the complete opposite of what I was expecting, to be honest. I think having watched the Belgium game against Panama, I thought it was going to be an exercise in patience. Just felt like a very novel experience to be able to watch an England match and at a tournament to just enjoy it, and as if they were just had their feet up in the second half and were just sort of strolling and conserving their energies for the next match. How often have we had that luxury watching the tournaments? Everything they hit went in. You know, every time they got a corner, they seemed to score. Every time they got a corner or across the board into the box, they seemed to be wrestled to the ground and get a penalty. And obviously, Harry Kane converted two of those. I don't think it was the most spectacular performance in some ways. I think it's a spectacular result. It's spectacularly efficient. I think it was really, really encouraging to see an England team playing that well. But I think they've got another gear that they could have reached if they'd really needed to. But how many times in tournaments have we seen England teams brought down to the level of really mediocre opponents or poor opponents? I still think there's room for improvement, as daft as that might sound. To me, it's a start that is so encouraging, not least, you know, it's not just the number of goals they've scored, the fact they've won these games. It's the feeling that they're doing this while suggesting that they are capable of better. And I'll probably be accused of being downbeat here, but I think it's actually upbeat to say that Harry Kane has scored 5 goals without, I think, having shown what he's really capable of. 2 of the goals today were penalties. The third was a deflection. He's not really shown what Spurs fans would recognise as the true Harry Kane yet. He's shown the prolific poaching goal scorer side. He's shown his mindset, his temperament are absolutely spot on at this tournament. He's shown the great instincts. He's been a poacher. He's been a great penalty taker. But I still think he can do better. I think it's probably really quite optimistic to say that England are capable of better in open play. And they will have to be capable of better because they're going to play much, much better opponents. But I do feel that they still have another gear to reach.
The Panama manager, Hernandario Gomez, said this: England are totally spectacular, a beautiful team. Paul, do you think that's a fair assessment?
I think we have been spectacular in some respects in the first two games here. I mean, going forward, we've caused an awful lot of problems for firstly Tunisia, and they didn't take the chances, and today they did take the chances. I mean, there was just carnage every time the ball went into the Panama box. I'm a little bit reluctant, totally agree with him, because I thought Panama were very poor today. But having said that, you know, obviously England, you can only beat what's in front of you, and the ruthlessness that we talked about not being in Volgograd when we played Tunisia was there today. And you know, they're quietly building momentum and quietly building confidence. It was good to see other players other than Harry Kane score the goals. I thought Jesse Lingard was very impressive and just got the goal that his performance was missing against Tunisia. So I'm a little bit less enthusiastic as maybe the Panama coach, but I think it's been a very, very good start to the tournament from England.
What about you, Matt? What do you make of it all?
You know, job done, qualified after two games, which, given where we've been in previous tournaments, obviously a huge improvement. I just like the sort of energy and positivity that surrounds the team, and I think that can take you quite a long way in a tournament if you get on a run. I mean, I think we'll talk about this later, but that's probably one of the reasons I would resist the temptation to make lots of changes for Thursday's game. The 11, 12, 13 players he's used so far, they fit a very specific game plan, and England are carrying that out very effectively. And the other thing that's really impressed has been the sort of quality of their free kicks and set pieces. If you contrast it to the basically the shambles in France 2 years ago, when obviously famously Harry Kane was taking corners and there was no penetration, I think England have had 10 corners in two games so far, and they've produced 7 shots or penalties, 3 goals, could have had 2 more penalties, and they're just incredibly, incredibly effective. And Kieran Trippier, in particular, his delivery from the right is world class. And when you've got big centre backs and Harry Kane in there, I think they will threaten most teams.
It's interesting you pick up on those sort of set pieces. Jonathan Northcroft writes about it in the Times as well, saying that this England squad is winning praise for how well that coached they are. From the set pieces to the passing, the training ground work, it seems, is pretty evident for all to see out on the pitch.
Really is. I was sort of chuckling to myself earlier about an incident maybe a year ago when we were up at St George's Park and Gareth Southgate sort of let it be known that they'd appointed this strikers coach, Alan Russell. He's a sort of Scottish striker coach, and that was a bit of a laugh in some of the papers. You know, why have England appointed a Scottish strikers coach? You know, Scotland haven't got any strikers, ha ha. But apparently he is the one who's doing lots of work on the training ground, devising the set pieces, by which John Stones converted today with an excellent header. So I think that hard work and Southgate's eye for detail does seem to be paying off.
So England face Belgium on Thursday night in Kaliningrad to see who will top Group G. They have identical goal difference. England lead the group right now, having received fewer yellow cards. Roberto Martinez said Belgium will make big changes. And Matt, you've suggested that they shouldn't. But Paul, what has Gareth Southgate alluded to?
Well, he's talked about wanting to keep momentum, but also striking a balance, because he's thought about the harmony within the group and the players he's not played so far, and he wants to try and be fair to some of those. I agree with Matt, to be honest. I think it's more important to try and keep the momentum that England are on. We saw, I mean, the slightly different situations, what we saw in the Euros 2 years ago. England had 4 points after two games, and Roy Hodgson made a lot of changes for the game against Slovakia. England drew 0-0. The momentum went out of the team, and then they struggled against Iceland. I think he will make some changes. I think the likes of maybe Rashford will come in now. You know, Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Walker, I think, are on bookings, whether or not that affects their involvement. Obviously, Dele Alli, we need to check on his fitness. But I think Southgate's inclination will be to keep the sort of changes to a minimum. He's been very particular in trying to drive a winning culture into this England team. And I don't think he'll want to jeopardise that now, even though passage is already secured and people are talking about, is it better to be second and slightly easier passage, apparently, you know, people say on paper. But no, I agree with what Matt said. I think it's important to maintain the momentum of the first two results and first two victories.
I think you're right, Paul. One thing I was wondering is, do you think Eric Dier will play? Sort of 2 or 3 weeks out, this was earmarked as a game for him and Henderson to play together and sort of shore things up a little bit midfield. Do you think that's one obvious change?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think Dier will probably come in for that game. I mean, I think one of the quotes that Southgate said was he wanted to be fair to the, I think he used the word harmony. So Eric Dier is one of those who's not played a single minute yet. So the longer that they go into the tournament, they're probably going to need more of the players. So yeah, I think that's a good shout. I think he will come into that midfield. Whether they play the sort of two holders or whether it's a straight swap for Jordan Henderson. Be interesting because I quite like England to sort of go at Belgium rather than I think they'd have the pace and the fluidity that might trouble them rather than to go more defensive minded.
What about Harry Kane, Matt? What do you think Gareth Southgate should do about him? Do they wrap him in cotton wool because he's such an important player, isn't he?
He is, but I would play him, and more importantly, Harry would play Harry. I think, you know, desperate to play in every sort of, you know, fairly inconsequential Spurs game towards the end of the season. So having scored 5 goals in 2 games, he'll be eyeing the golden boot, won't he? I think you have to play. I mean, the one caveat is I'm not at training. I've not seen the reports on the physical condition of the players. If he's carrying a knock or they think he's tired, then maybe you rest him. But I think all things being equal, he has to start. He'll want to start. And, you know, these players, they shouldn't really be tired. I know it's been a long season, but apart from the Liverpool players, the back end of the Premier League season, most of the sort of big games are out of the way. You know, they've had a rest. Southgate, in the build-up, made a point of giving them quite a lot of days off. They didn't travel around the world. They stayed in England. So they should be relatively fresh. I don't think they've been, Paul would know better than I, but I don't think they've been, you know, absolutely murdering them in training over there in fairly mild temperatures in northern Russia. So I think the players should be fresh enough, and I'd maybe bring in a couple of changes, maybe Dier and maybe give Danny Rose a game at left back. But other than that, I'd keep a very similar team.
Let's now focus on the group standings. If you pick up a copy of the game pullout in the Times on Monday morning, you'll see the headline, "Oh no, did we score too many?" Mac Dickinson has written about how one side of the draw is more loaded with historically stronger nations than the other, which you can read all about at thetimes.co.uk. Now, do bear with me for this one, because at present, Brazil and Germany are set to meet in the last 16. And if England get through to the quarterfinals, they could face either Brazil or Germany in the last 8. If they came second, they would face the winners of the last 16 tie, which is currently scheduled to be Mexico versus Switzerland. Now, that is assuming England get past their last 16 opponents, which, if the group stage was over today, would be Senegal. So, this is the big question. Should any of this factor into Gareth Southgate's thinking, Paul, when approaching the Belgium game?
No, I don't think so. I just think it gets too complicated, too ahead of ourselves. I think Iceland is the warning. Bit large is that everybody went into the knockout game at Euro 2016 and thought that, like, Iceland would be, you know, a gimme, and that was England finishing in the second in the group behind Wales, and we obviously know what happened there. So I just think he's got to concentrate on winning the game. There's no better confidence booster than winning matches, especially for England when they've not done that at tournaments enough recently. So I just think he needs to concentrate on a formula that wins the Belgium game, and the rest will take care of itself. If they're good enough, they're good enough. I don't think we can plot a route, so to speak, through so-called easier games.
I agree with that completely, and I think Southgate will probably do the same as well. But what makes this situation particularly intriguing is the probability or strong possibility of being tied on points and goal difference with Belgium towards the end of the game on Thursday with 5 minutes to go, and bookings being a potential, you know, tiebreaker almost. So there'd be a temptation for both managers there to throw in a cynical booking, you know, in the last 5 minutes to pick up more bookings and then therefore finish second. That's a bit different to sort of not trying to win the game. And I know what Jose Mourinho would do, so I wonder what Gareth Southgate and Roberto Martinez will do.
Having spoken before the Tunisia game about emulating Cristiano Ronaldo, Harry Kane currently is outdoing him. He's scored 5 goals so far in this tournament, leading the way in the race for the Golden Boot. He's also scored more goals in the group stage of the World Cup than any England player has previously managed. But Ollie Kaye says we haven't actually seen the best of Harry Kane. We haven't yet seen Tottenham's Harry Kane, and that he could step it up a level.
Well, I think it's quite interesting if you look at the goals that he scored, because I don't think England have had, this is going to sound stupid, but I don't think we've created a clear-cut opportunity for him from open players yet. If you look at the 2 goals against Tunisia, both from set pieces, the save that comes back off the keeper for the first one, Harry Maguire header, goes towards goal and he's the quickest to react. 2 penalties today. And then the shot from Loftus-Cheek that clips his heel. He's not had a sort of, you know, running through onto the ball or a cross comes in like Ronaldo's header the other day that he scored. So I think that you can look at it 2 ways. I mean, England haven't serviced him properly yet and he's got 5 goals. Or is that going to be a problem when you get against better defences who aren't so susceptible at set pieces as Tunisia and Panama have proved?
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host Luke Jones for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Game, World Cup Daily from the Times with Natalie Sawyer.
You can hear live commentary of all of Monday's games on TalkSport. It starts in Group A with Russia taking on Uruguay at 3 o'clock on TalkSport, with Saudi Arabia versus Egypt at the same time on TalkSport 2. Then at 7 in Group B, Spain face Morocco on TalkSport, while the clash between Iran and Portugal is live on TalkSport 2. Colombia kept alive their hopes of qualifying for the round of 16 with a thumping 3-0 win over Poland. It's a result that sends Poland out of the World Cup. And it was a great night for Colombia with Radamel Falcao scoring his first goal at the World Cup, Matt.
That's amazing, though, isn't it, given how long he's been a sort of feature in European football. But, of course, he had dreadful injuries for many years and a bit of a renaissance for him latterly. Colombia are very impressive. I thought they, you know, played fairly well in their first game against Japan, given they had 10 men for such a long period, and they're utterly dominant today against a really, really poor Poland team in which Robert Lewandowski looks like a sort of, you know, the shadow of the great striker that he is.
Just how bad, though, have Poland been? Because they are the first European side to be knocked out of this World Cup.
They are, and they're also, you know, one of the top seeds, which was a surprise to many when the seedings were announced. Based on their world ranking of 8th in the world, they kind of game the system, Poland, a bit like Switzerland. They caught on to the fact that if you didn't play many friendlies, you kept your ranking points, basically. But I think their performances in this World Cup have showed up what a sham that system is, and it's actually subsequently been changed, because in both games they've offered little. I mean, the first game against Senegal, they weren't really in it. Senegal got a 2-goal lead and they scored very late on, and today they, you know, by half time the game was really over. I thought Colombia were very dominant. So Poland been very disappointing, but it does leave the group wonderfully poised. Japan, you think, would be favourites to go through, given they play Poland next, which leaves Senegal and Colombia facing off, kind of winner takes all. Really, a point would be enough for Senegal. But both games they've played so far have been very entertaining, very, very open, very end-to-end. And it's added interest for England fans because we could end up playing them the next round.
How do you think England would fare against a Colombian side?
I think it'd be fun. There'd be lots of goals. We'd, you know, enjoy the pictures of the crowd panning to Carlos Valderrama and René Higuita, who seem to be everywhere. Colombia go with their extraordinary hairstyles, defying
them,
the years. Yeah. So I think that would be entertaining games. Goals, both these teams score lots of goals, but equally give you a chance, a bit like England, you could say. So it'd be fun to watch. And if you're Gareth Southgate, you think you'd probably happily take either for a place in a World Cup quarterfinal.
Well, we caught up with Alison Rudd in the Kazan Arena, where it's turning into a second home for her now.
It's been interesting, because this is my third match in Kazan, and each game has had its own very clear identity. So for the Iran-Spain game, it was all about the horns, the relentless horns. And I didn't mind it, actually. I thought it was great fun, and it was intimidating, and it did rattle Spain a little bit, I think. But that had its own personality. The Colombia game, that was not about horns. It was just about joy, actually. Shrieking, screaming, gasping, happiness, songs, relentless support, not a single negative sound from them. And the fans had one spasm of chanting, and that was it. It really did, for once, mirror the match, the crowd, each section of the crowd and the teams on the pitch. Can only have helped. And if England do end up playing Colombia next, no, we're not sure what's going to happen. But if they do, I mean, it's certainly going to be worth warning the players about the cacophony that they will be playing in. Two teams, both had to win, but both knew if they lost, they were out. Poland were paralysed by that concept, and Colombia decided somehow to just take that as a, hey, it's, you know, give it all, we've got nothing to lose, let's go for it. Their energy levels, their pace, their timing was great. And they were having fun, and afterwards their coach said, this is a combination of football where you know what you have to do, but you can still be creative and enjoy it and not be destructive. And he was sort of proud that they're still in the competition courtesy of attractive, vibrant football. And that's exactly what the game is, and it's what the fans, who were three-quarters Colombia, gave the whole stadium. Poland offered very little.
The Game, World Cup Daily from The Times with Natalie Sawyer.
We'll be giving you a Times trivia teaser question every day on every podcast, as provided by Times statistician Bill Edgar. Last time out, we asked you, which is the sole country to have only ever played one match at a World Cup? Well, the answer was the Dutch East Indies, or Indonesia, as they're now known. Their only tournament was in 1938, when the format was a straight knockout, and they lost 6-0 to Hungary in the first round. That was a toughie. Our teaser today. The winning goal in the 1990 World Cup final was scored by a left-back, West Germany's Andy Bremer. In the 2006 final, which left-back converted the decisive spot kick in the shootout for Italy? Tune in to our next podcast to find out that answer. Japan and Senegal are still very much in the hunt for a place in the knockout stages after drawing 2-2. They're both unbeaten with 4 points. Senegal may well be disappointed that they didn't hold out for the win, but Japan twice came back to level, and it certainly was an entertaining match in Yekaterinburg, Matt.
Yeah, I thought Japan should have won, really. They had a lot of chances and showed great spirit coming from behind twice. It was just a great game to watch, and the Senegal keeper Ndai was just comedy gold. He kept running off his line, spilling everything. It sort of, you know, harked back to the old days watching the World Cup where, let's say, not all countries had great goalkeepers.
Let's move ahead to match day 12, and it's the start of the final group games. The hosts, Russia, face Uruguay at 3 o'clock. Both teams through to the last 16, but this fixture will decide top spot in Group A. Uruguay must win if they are to finish top. A draw would be enough for Russia to win the group on goal difference. So how do you see this one finishing up?
I don't think there'll be that many goals in this game, actually. I think Russia may have got their goals out of their system already in the first two games, and Uruguay's defence is very, very strong. I just think it's amazing that Russia are through already, really, because, again, a week ago, they hadn't really given themselves a chance of doing anything. So I think maybe a draw will be enough, and they top the group. Party on.
You mentioned Uruguay's defence. They, along with Croatia, are the only nations yet to concede a goal at this World Cup, which is quite remarkable. That centre-back pairing of Godin and Jimenez just proving very hard to get past.
Yeah, it's just amazing, really, when you think you've got Luis Suarez and Edison Cavani in your team and everyone's talking about the defence. But, I mean, Godin has been doing it for years at the very, very highest level, hasn't he? And Uruguay always incredibly competitive, resolute, and they're a team you wouldn't want in the next round.
Well, then, at 7 on Monday evening, Group B is where we focus on, and qualification hasn't yet been settled. Spain face the eliminated Morocco. Iran must beat Portugal to have any chance of overtaking either them or Spain. So do you think Iran could spoil the party at all?
Well, this is possible, and I thought they played very well against Spain last week, if not particularly pleasing on the eye, but they had a game plan, defended well and created a couple of half chances on the break. Having said that, I can't really see them beating Portugal. Ronaldo, in the mood that he has been in, you would fancy them to win this group.
Not even with the Carlos Queiroz factor.
I think of Carlos Queiroz, you just want to hear what Roy Keane's going to say about him next.
I know, it's been quite damning.
It's very spicy, yeah.
Yeah. Well, of course, the top two teams in groups A and B will face each other in the last 16. That's it for now. Many thanks to my guests today, Matt Hughes, Paul Joyce, Oliver Kay and Alison Rudd. Subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet. For a limited time only, it is just £1 a month for your first 3 months. Search The Times Sale for more information. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast supplier. We'll be back on Monday night after the final match day in Groups A and B, and we'll be joined by Henry Winter. We'll see you then.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.